Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter Nick Keiser behind the glass. Good Thursday to you. Hope you're having a fantastic day. It is NFL schedule release day, and I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care, but I also do care at the same time. And I heard Robbie's rant yesterday, which made me laugh. I know Robbie, you know, doesn't care and thinks it's so silly that we put so much effort into this. But, you know, it's entertaining. I mean, it gives you something to talk about. I kind of wish, like, I'm glad they do it now because for planning purposes, it makes my job a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, people can plan and travel and everything. But at the same time, it could give us something to talk about in June if they were to wait and do it then.
Well, my thing is, if you want to make it this whole big reveal, then don't just lay out, okay, these are going to be your home games, these are going to be away games. Just do it all at once if you actually want to make it this big reveal. But the fact that we already know their home games, their away games, the teams that they're playing – and, I mean, now a reporter, Robbie said this morning, already has leaked the entire Packers schedule. So
yeah, that always happens.
It's not like in the international games were yesterday. So you already can put the pieces together and pretty much figure out what your team's schedule is. But I think I would get a lot more excited if they actually just – and listen, anything you do with the NFL except for, like, the Pro Bowl, but people do like the Pro Bowl. I mean, you can make a profitable TV package for it. I mean, look at what the draft's become just over the last 10 years. I mean, it dominates. But I have a feeling you could make a full-on reveal TV production, and it could compete with some of the playoff games right now just because of how big the NFL is. Am I still watching the playoff games? Yes.
Of course.
But it could compete with it.
Well, what's interesting is they announced the opener, the Thursday opener. The Super Bowl champion always hosts an opener. Chiefs-Lions?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. I like it because it's different.
It's fun. It's unique. I mean, last year was...
Dan Campbell in prime time. Let's go.
Last year was Rams-Bills. Right? And I mean, it was so hyped up. Matthew Stafford, yeah. The Bills team. Everybody thought the Bills were going to be undefeated, the best team, and go and win the Super Bowl. And the Bills ended up taking that game, and I think they won handling.
But they, like, did, yeah. I mean, it was not much of a game.
I mean, I would rather see Chiefs host the Jets or something. Or, I don't know. No shade against the Lions, but we know what sells, and it's two elite quarterbacks, and no shade against Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions, but I don't know how much that's moving the needle. I'll watch it because Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs, and the first
game. Yeah, that's what I was
game,
about to say. You'll watch.
Yeah, of course
I'll watch.
It's the first game. Of course.
Like anybody that's like, oh, this game sucks, you'll still watch.
Of course, of course. You know, I will watch any game that Patrick Mahomes plays in and watch. Look, watch the first game of the season, like the Lions beat them or something. And then it'll be like, oh, the Lions, they're back.
Ooh, this is a good one. Mike on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. Schedule release show in place of 1,345 mock drafts.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What do you care about more? The build up to the draft and then the draft itself? Because let's be honest, like the draft itself is exciting like the first two nights, and then nobody cares about Saturday.
Yeah, then you just see who your team got.
Yeah, I mean, then you're just checking your phone, and then you're like, oh, cool. Yeah, they got a linebacker. I don't know who the hell that is, but I'm excited about it.
He played in the SEC, so I'm cool with that.
Right. I mean, that's kind of what it is.
That is a very fair point, because the length of time from the Super Bowl ending in about February – well, it's obviously hockey season, you trickle in some basketball, but NFL, we are talking about it all year long. I mean, we talk mock drafts. I mean, there's already been some for 2024, which is insane. But we talk mock drafts from about March till just a couple weeks ago.
Because it's content.
Just a couple weeks ago.
Well, and just like, you know, I listened to Jared yesterday, and he was doing his schedule predictions for the Titans. Now, I brought up on this show months ago that I thought one of the Jags games could be Monday night. I think at Jacksonville could be a Monday night game. I'm going to stick with that, even though Honestly, I'm not sure they get a primetime game. They could get a Thursday game, but that might be it.
I mean, when they got the Week 18 Saturday game, that was the first time they had a primetime game in Jacksonville in a very long time. So I wouldn't be surprised heading into this year if they got one in Jacksonville with Tennessee.
Yeah, well, because for the longest time, we made the joke of, well, you can write in a Titans-Jags Thursday night game.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And that might have been the last time in Jacksonville that it had been one. I'd have to go back and look. But
I like that prediction.
Yeah, I'm not feeling as good about it now. But I think the one thing that might intrigue the schedule makers, because here's where I think it could be. I think it could be in the back half of the season, because what could potentially have happened by the back half of the season?
Will Levis could be starting.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the intrigue is, okay, do we wait till after London and after the bye? Because the teams that go to London have the option that can put the bye after the London trip. So I have a feeling that's what the Titans will do. So,
and it's pretty much right in the middle of the season.
Right, because October 15th is when they'll play Baltimore in London. And so they could do the bye then. And then, you know, if they're 2-4 or what have you, do they turn the keys over to Levis? And then the schedule makers would have gotten it right, because it's like, oh, okay, Levis has like 2 or 3 games under his belt, and then they're going to play Jacksonville on Monday night.
Well, what if they're 2-4 and, you know, the Colts are in a similar position, the Houston Texans are in a similar position, and maybe the Jags are 3-3 and you're not knocked out of your division just based off of, you know, looking at the other teams. I mean, I think whoever wins this division could be a just above 500 team.
Well, if last year hadn't happened, if Amy Adams Strunk hadn't fired J-Rob midseason, I would have told you Vrabel probably still rides with Tannehill and just, you know, stays the course and let Levis sit. But the fact that, I mean, she could change her mind and fire him, you know, even though this appears to be the plan, I don't know, I would say it could change Vrabel's way of thinking.
See, I think that actually the opposite in that situation, right? If you have Tannehill, at least you know you're going to win some games. And even if you start off a little rocky, we know that this is the weakest division in the AFC, that Vrabel's not just going to...
Today
it is, correct. Vrabel's not just going to switch to the rookie and be like, okay, well, you know what? We're not winning this thing anyways. Because I look at that and I think, well, I mean, she fired J-Rob in the middle of the season. Like, she could do the same thing to Vrabel, especially if they are losing. And then, you know, giving the rookie an opportunity. I get it. It gets fans excited. But, it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be fascinating. And breaking news, everybody. Ryan Tannehill will be the day one starter. We found out yesterday.
Man, you got me excited for a second. I was like, wait, what? I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, John just texted in and says, is it not possible that the Tennessee Titans win the South? I mean, I'm not taking that out of the question. We have this conversation, and you just pointed out when I said it. I said, well, the AFC South is the weakest division in the AFC, and you said, as of right now, which is so true. I mean, how many times do we look at teams in the offseason and we think, oh, my gosh, Russell Wilson from Seattle to the Broncos? They're going to be insane. They could win the division next year. Okay, the team doesn't make the playoffs, right? They're so incredibly disappointing. You looked at the Green Bay team last year and you thought, okay, can Rodgers do it this year, coming off an MVP season?
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so prime example, going back, the AFC West. We looked at the AFC West last year and went, that's going to be a loaded division.
And they were playing
Kansas City, Chargers are going to be really, really good. Russ in Denver. Denver's going to be awesome. I almost said Oakland. Raiders are going to be better.
Derek Carr, Devontae Adams.
Yeah, Devontae Adams is there. Well, Raiders and Broncos didn't make the playoffs, and Chargers were okay, but they got in. But
yeah, they loaded up, and they had a lot of injuries. And
then who'd they lose to in the first round?
The Jags.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were up 27.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Lawrence had thrown the ball away, like had turned it over like 4 times, and they still came back and won. So, we don't know. I mean, like, I look at this year, the AFC North. I don't know what the hell the AFC North is going to be. You know, you say Cincinnati and Baltimore probably is right there with them.
I think Cleveland has one of the most talented
rosters.
I
don't know what Cleveland is. I don't know what Cleveland is.
But, I mean, what is Deshaun Watson? We've seen him perform at a very, very high level, but that's been in almost 2 years.
I don't know if Junie's in the building, but as soon as I say this, he's probably going to run up the stairs. I don't know what the heck Pittsburgh is. I mean, I don't know what I don't know what the Steelers will be.
Kenny Pickett did lead that team in a couple fourth quarters.
He did, but I mean, I still don't know. I mean, the AFC East is going to be intriguing now that Rodgers is in it. You know, I think are we still anointing Buffalo, or is everybody going to anoint the Jets now that Rodgers is there?
I think the conversation probably has turned towards the Jets because of, you know, the outstanding rookies they had last year, the roster that they have around Rodgers. And to be frank, the Bills were...
I'm Chase.
The Bills were a disappointment. Josh Allen struggled with turning the ball over last year and not being able to, you know, protect the football. So what does that look like next year? I mean, what does their offensive line look like? I don't think they have Saffold back. It's going to be interesting because we can say... I mean, I had the Ravens, I think, preseason winning the Super Bowl last year. I think it was them I had, and...
Wait, Roger Saffold is a free agent. Why the hell isn't he on the Titans?
Yeah, remember, I have been saying that in
I know,
free
I
agency.
Said that too. Like, I thought he re-signed with the Bills. He's still a free agent? Rand, get on the phone! What are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, you
go
could...
Go get Big Rog.
You could go sign him to...
Cheap!
A 2-year, $8 million deal, or a 1-year... $4 million deal? I mean,
you could still put Skoronski at left guard.
You need depth at that position
anyway. Yeah, I mean, you just bring him in as a depth piece. He's a free agent. Or, or you sit Petit Frere and you could put Skoronski at right tackle and put Raj at left guard. I'd subscribe to that. Or put Dillard at right tackle and put Skoronski at left. That's what I do. Put Skoronski at left tackle, Raj at left guard, move Dillard over to right tackle. Boom, done, solved.
Yeah. I mean, Trevor Maddich even threw out the option of Skoronski potentially playing center.
Yeah. I mean, that's true too.
That situation would be intriguing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think he played center in high school.
I mean, to start off in the – I think to start him at guard, but that could be a position where he transfers.
Yeah, I've heard Trev say that.
I mean, having Big Rog here, he's a veteran guy. He knows what this offense is. He's a leader. He's durable. I mean, he's one of the best run blockers out there. I just wonder what terms did he leave on? He knows that it's a business, but what was that like when he left here?
You know, I got a thought on that.
Okay.
615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in, and I'll give my thoughts on what Michelle just said. And also, there's an aspect to the schedule that I think you should pay attention to. We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063 The Game.
What do you think, at least looking from Amy Adams Strunk's point of view, fair expectations for Mike Vrabel this season? And if Mike Vrabel doesn't meet those expectations, is he going into 2024 on the hot seat?
I mean, I think by a show of hands that no one listening can see, I mean, I think we would all say we were surprised to see John Robinson fired in December.
Yes.
So by that aspect, if you're saying, oh, there are certain people who are just untouchable, I think that told everybody that no one in the organization is unfireable given certain circumstances. And that the circumstances in December were not anywhere close to the expectations of September. And, I mean, if you start to think about where this defense was, the 2022 Titans defense, they ranked sixth in points allowed. They were first against the run. They were third on third down from week two all the way to the end of the season. And that group was elite enough to be a contending team. They were coming off of that playoff loss to Cincinnati. But that's also a defense that had the most veterans. You know, there's not a super young group. And the one thing that they haven't invested in up front on the defensive line is they haven't drafted that defensive line or outside linebacker in the first three rounds since Jeffrey Simmons. So,
Jonathan Hutton from OutKick on Yesterday with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. And I'll get to that point in a second about Mike Vrabel and tying that into the schedule. But you brought up, you know, Roger Saffold, or I brought up Roger Saffold and why he's still a free agent, because you brought him up initially. And I'm like, wait, what? And, you know, the question is, okay, well, why would he even want to come back? And, of course, Rick had to text me. He loves this topic because he's like, people are obsessed with guys coming back. Why would they want to come back? Well, here's my take on that. He's a free agent. Mm-hmm. Nobody's calling. So, number one, you know, like if Corey Davis is available and, you know, he's the best option to come in at wide receiver and you bring him into camp, then okay, you take the call. I think we make way too much of, you know, a guy got cut or, you know, they didn't renew his contract and he's like, oh, you know, he goes on Twitter right after the fact and is like, screw them, I'll prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that was then. Like, now who cares? Like, you got Roger Saffold didn't get cut because Roger Saffold was a bad player. Roger Saffold got cut because he made too much money.
Yeah, it was a cap casualty.
And that is the league. And I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. So he could have been pissed off about it, and maybe he's still a little pissed off about it. But guess what? If they call, I bet he answers. And if it works for him, then they could probably do it. Now, Vrabel and Carthon might go, eh, we like what we got. Let's roll with this. I mean, it's not like they haven't necessarily fixed everything, but I still think they could use some depth.
100%.
On the offensive line and have competition. I mean, I think what I laid out there of if you were to bring Saffold into camp and, you know, maybe right now he wouldn't be a starter on the depth chart, but you could look at different things. You could look at Dillard at right tackle, Skoronski at left tackle. You could look at Skoronski at center. I mean, there's a lot of different options that you could go there. I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah. I'm not saying it is going to happen, but I just get so tired of we dismiss. Oh, no, they got cut. They don't want to come back.
No, I think the way I look at it is him actually looking at this team right now.
Sure.
And I get it. He's, you know, he's 32 years old. He's made a lot of money in this league. He's been a great run blocker. He was a cap casualty 2 years ago. He goes to Buffalo, but he went to Buffalo, a team that was in very much a go-for-it mode. At what point in his career would he be ready to come back to this Titans team? Yeah, you're blocking for Derrick Henry, but I think the message, it's pretty clear across the league when you draft a young quarterback. Do I want to do that? Hey, maybe he still wants to play. Maybe he still wants to, you know, ride out his career, maybe sign a 1 or 2 year contract.
I think a team will sign him.
Yeah, and it just comes down to, you know, what does he want? How did that conversation go? He understands it's a business. He understands that, you know, people at his position, it's not necessarily a flashy position. It's not an elite wide receiver or a quarterback. He gets it. He's on the offensive line, a very, very important position. But I mean, when he looks at this offense, yeah, you want to get paid, you want to be on a roster, but what is the cost, you know? Like, what is worth it for him? What type of contract? And also, what type of team he's joining? Because at that point in your career, do you want to join a team that you don't even know is going to make the playoffs? I know we don't know, but I think you look at this team in a transition period, and it just might not be a good fit.
Yeah, you never know. So,
I think it'd be great if he came.
Yeah, no, for sure. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. John in Nashville says, I have a feeling a healthy Ryan and improved O-line for Derek. Strong defense with Landry back. Win the South easy. I'm not going to go that far, John, but I like your optimism.
Easy? I think we're also kind of not – I know we talk about the game against the Jags and how Tennessee almost beat them with Josh
Dobbs.
Yeah,
nobody believes in Jacksonville right now, and I think that's a mistake.
Well, everybody's just assuming that they're the team they were last year. Guys, they got better, right? Like,
yeah, they're going to get Ridley.
In the offseason, you know – yeah, of course, Ridley, but how about just another year of Trevor Lawrence, a full offseason with Doug Peterson and going into his third year as an NFL quarterback? I mean, it only started to click for him halfway through the year. He's going in this year proven what he can do and still has more to prove. I think we're looking at this Jacksonville team thinking that their ceiling is the game against the Titans last year in Week 18 when they almost beat them with the Josh Dobbs when – a team can get a lot better between, you know, free agency. They've got a good defense. And also throughout the draft, and let's also not forget, Trevor Lawrence was the number one pick in the draft. We saw what he did in college, and he started to show some of that last year.
I'm going to go hot take city right here. Oof, okay. And Jared might turn this into a segment with what I'm about to say.
Oh, gosh.
Trevor Lawrence is going to be in the MVP discussion. Write that down.
This year?
This year.
Or like in his career?
This year. I think Trevor Lawrence is in the MVP discussion.
I mean, I don't think being in
I still
the
think
end-
like Burrow and, you know, those guys like Josh Allen, like that they're going Rodgers could be, you know, if he balls out, but
yeah,
I think he's going to be in Mahomes. He's going to be in the discussion.
I mean, in 2019, Ryan Tannehill was in the discussion. Aaron Rodgers was going to win the MVP.
Sure, right.
But Ryan Tannehill was in the discussion, and people thought, you know, look at his career, look at his numbers, look at his efficiency. So I don't think it's some, like, crazy statement that that could happen.
Nick
could.
Already tweeted it.
Nick Kieser tweeted it?
Yeah. He did. Is Trevor Lawrence in the MVP discussion this season? Chase thinks so.
Oh, gosh. I mean, if he has a really efficient year, I don't think talking about somebody in that conversation is crazy. I think if you were to say, yeah, no, he's going to be a finalist or, you know.
Yeah, now Jacksonville's going to have a first-place schedule. So, I mean, that's
take
something.
Take that into account. But they also play the Tennessee Titans twice, the mm-hmm. Houston Texans twice, and the Indianapolis Colts twice.
Yeah, and, like, I don't think, like, Stroud and Richardson are going to struggle. I mean, they just
are. Yeah, they're rookies, of course. John in Nashville. No one in the AFC South will ever win the MVP.
Well, a quarterback has, so. two of them, actually, have. So,
so good try.
Yeah.
Close,
yeah,
but okay. No cigar.
So, yeah. My point on Vrabel, look, I don't think his seat's going to be hot. I think that would be – I think Amy Adams Strunk fired John Robinson, but I think she knows that the moment – she'll say, you're fired, and Vrabel will have another job. Like, she won't even finish the sentence, and he will – his phone will be ringing.
Jim Irsay will be calling for
you. Oh, Jerry Jones.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, they would look, if the Cowboys don't do anything of significance this year, they're probably looking for a coach.
I mean, I was surprised, and I still believe that they were looking for Sean Payton to
yeah,
come there.
Yeah, they wanted Payton.
But you're not just going to fire your current coach for anybody. Unless something, you know, awful happened, right? They're going to keep McCarthy there. And, yeah, they would have fired him for Sean Payton. But I think next year, or this year at least, will be very, very telling for them.
John in Nashville says this decade. I'm going to disagree with you, sir. I am going to disagree with you. I think one of the – I mean, I've already said I think Lawrence will be in the conversation this year. But I think one of these four quarterbacks will win an MVP. In the next 5 years. And I would say right now my money's on Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, you're saying out of Trevor Lawrence and let's just say Anthony Richardson, CJ Stroud, and potentially
and Will
Levis.
Levis. Yep.
Yeah, I just think it's really hard. I mean, it's so hard to say right now. I mean, Trevor Lawrence was the first overall pick. We saw what he did in college at Clemson. The guy had never even really lost a game until he came to college or until he came to the NFL.
Right.
So I just think it's too early to even say. I mean, we have no idea what Levis, Richardson, or CJ Stroud are going to be. Like, absolutely no idea. Whereas Trevor Lawrence coming in was the clear favorite number one overall pick, no questions asked.
Coming up next, I heard something yesterday out of Barry Trotz that made me scratch my head. We will discuss that here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Barry, you talked about, you know, the status of John Hines at the end of the season press conference, and now he's under contract, but some evaluation still needs to take place. Where are you at in terms of the evaluation of John Hines, and is there any news on what his status looks like for next year?
No, I exactly what I said at the press conference. I'm going to evaluate. I think John did a terrific job, as I said when I came on. We sort of moved four players. At the trade deadline, he lost eight players to injury, and he continued to, you know, forge on with the group. And what I like about what John did is he just coached the group that he had. And I know John and his staff are good coaches. I sat in their meetings. I listened to them. I understand what they're doing. So with John, I just said, you know, from my perspective, everybody is going to be evaluated. And also, I'm going to evaluate other organizations, too. So if I can improve in any aspect of our organization, be it coaching or development, I'm going to try to do that. But I can tell you the staff is a really good staff. They know what they're doing, and I have a lot of trust in them.
That was Barry Trotz, incoming Predators general manager, yesterday on Robbie and Rex Road. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. You can hit us up anytime on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com at 615-737-1025. But I heard that. Michelle, I know you were sitting in with Robbie yesterday on the show, and I'm like, okay. I mean, it's been like a month since the end of the year press conference, mm-hmm. and he basically just said the same thing. And I know Barry has a process, and I know Barry very well, and so he's going to be methodical in how he does this. But my initial thought was, what are you still evaluating? What is there? You know, if you've made the decision to keep him, then I think you would say, yeah, no, he's our head coach. Well, but he didn't say that. And mm-hmm. so it kind of makes me wonder, is there somebody out there that is still coaching in the playoffs, assistant or an AHL coach, that he hasn't had a chance to talk to, that he wants to talk to before he makes his final decision?
Yeah, I think that based off of his responses and not being committal on John Hines, it definitely makes your ears perk up, especially because it's May 11th and the Predators haven't been playing for a while and playoff hockey's still going on. The Milwaukee Admirals are still in their postseason play right now. And he also made a comment in there as well about evaluating other teams. Like other coaches. So, you know, what does that mean around the league? And could there be somebody that he has his eye on and he's just waiting until they're not playing anymore to have a conversation? And I think sometimes, too, you know, an easy scapegoat answer from that could have been, well, John Hines is... he's under contract with us. That's usually one that we hear and we see a lot with people when we ask about Ryan Tannehill, right? Tannehill's under contract. He's, you know what I mean? It's a very easy answer to go to. I also think that, you know, Barry and David Poile were very open to us that these conversations with Barry and David Poile started in December about the general manager position, and there was a lot happening behind the scenes. So, you know, as soon as Barry even thinks or believes that it's a potential that he's going to become the GM of the Nashville Predators, you're thinking about these things because, you know, once you take that seat, it is now your job to do everything in your power to make this team win and to create a winning culture and have, you know, the best players you believe in, a coach who you think can lead them to a Stanley Cup. So I do believe that, you know, this makes that comment yesterday makes me think they are open to other interviewing or talking to other coaches just because of the point we are right now. And that was an opportunity essentially just to say, no, yeah, he's our coach for next year.
Yeah. I mean, my takeaway is there's going to be some sort of change, whether it's Hines or, you know, the staff. I believe that if Carl Taylor doesn't get a head coaching job, he's going to be on the Nashville staff as an assistant. And that is a very Barry Trotz type move because mm-hmm. that's what he did with Peter Horacek. That's what he did with Lane Lambert. He did that, I think, with some assistants when he was in Washington. He likes to take the head coach from the American League affiliate and then put them on the staff. I totally see that being a possibility here. It would be natural. Scott Ford, who's a longtime assistant in Milwaukee, would take over as a head coach. That feels easy to me. I think he could restructure some things in the front office. You know, David has three assistant general managers right now. You know, could Barry bring in somebody that he trusts? You know, could he restructure some things? I think that's going to happen because, look, it's his show now. And it's hard, in a sense, to sit there and go, okay, well, I don't want to come in and change everything because David's such a legend and he's done it the right way for us so long. But at the same time, you have to go, it's my time now. And so you need to do things your way. And I believe that Barry is going to do that. And I believe that David has blessed him to do that and said, like, this is your, don't do it the way I did it. Do it the way you want to do it. And so I know when I took over here, a little inside baseball, but I kind of went through that of like, okay, well, we've had this stuff in place that Ryan put in place, but it's not that I think it was a bad idea. It's just, I want to do things a little different. And so I did. And
yeah, it's just a different perspective coming in when you take over that role. And I think Barry has an even more interesting one because not only did he coach here for so long, he's been a part of a lot of different organizations around the NHL, a lot of winning organizations around the NHL, but he sat in that coach seat and he knows that David Poile has had a very consistent organization over the last 20 years. I mean, the Predators are known for, you know, not having a lot of coaching turnover, which the NHL is pretty prone to. I mean, it's not uncommon to see a coach 2 years, maybe be successful in his first and second year, but if they have an early playoff exit, it's not uncommon for them to get fired. So yeah. I'm really 50-50 on it, but I do still lean towards, okay, could Barry at least start the season with John Hines and let him see, okay, what can he do and what does the team look like at that point?
Yeah.
Because he does have a year left.
Yeah, and something that Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet brought up, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, but general managers are a little timid and keep that with a coach that has 1 year left on the deal. They do one of two things usually. They either extend them or they fire them. But they typically don't let them go into with 1 year left because, you know, the coach might sit there and go, okay, well, am I a lame duck or what is this? And so I don't see a scenario where he extends him. And so that kind of makes me think, does he just go ahead and do it? Does he make the change? I mean, I do think there's somebody that he wants to talk to that he hasn't had a chance to talk to yet. And when Gerard Gallant got fired from the Rangers, I immediately went like, ooh, that changed, not just for the Predators, but that changes the game for teams that might have been on the fence about firing a guy because Gallant's going to get another shot. Peter Laviolette, I don't know. He's not coming back here, no. But I don't know if he's going to – that may be it for him.
Really?
I think it could be.
I think he'll end up on a team somewhere.
Peter is a really good coach. Great coach. I'd put him in that. I mean, he's won a Stanley Cup. Peter's a hard ass, and that wears on people. And I just think that you can only do that for so long. And, you know, it didn't really work in Washington. So I think he may have to take a year off at least. But I don't know if in this cycle he gets one. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, covers the NHL for them. We'll ask him about this and what he thinks about the status of Hines and the Predators. We'll do that next here. 1025, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezvit with you. Join us this Friday for the grand opening of the new Dunkin' Donuts in Cane Ridge, located at 191 Burkett Commons Avenue. First 100 guests will receive free coffee for a year at the Cane Ridge location only. And we'll be on site doing ticket giveaways from 7 to 9 a.m. Looking forward to that. Let's say hello now to Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. Covers the NHL for them as the playoffs continue right now. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Greg.
I'm good. So I wrote my column today for ESPN on the coaching carousel and the coaching vacancies that are happening in the NHL. And I said in the piece, there's probably more to come. And thanks to Barry Trotz, there probably will be, maybe. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, well, and that's where I was going to go with this, because he was on our station yesterday and was asked about John Hines' status, and he basically gave the same answer that he gave a month ago at the press conference, that he's evaluating. And I'm like, Barry, how much evaluation you got to do, man? Like, so that tells me, and you know this, covering this league for as long as you have, that tells me there's somebody that's still coaching that he wants to talk to, whether it's Spencer Carberry that he's been linked to, that he was with in Washington when he was with Spencer was with Hershey, Andrew Brunette, original Predator, Carl Taylor. I mean, Gerard Gallant just got fired. So to me, it tells me that there might be somebody out there that he wants to speak with.
Yeah, and Carberry seems like the most obvious choice, right? I mean, he's first of all, he's got ties both to Trotz from his time in Washington and then to Washington. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. He might have himself a couple of different options. But, you know, was a really bright coach in the American Hockey League, won American Hockey League Coach of the Year. He's like 41, so he's like, you know, a young up-and-coming assistant coach. You know, he's never been the head coach in the NHL, but that shouldn't stop you from hiring somebody off the bench. And so, you know, it's also interesting to think about that in the context of Toronto, too. I mean, Toronto obviously extended its playoff life last night with the win over the Panthers. They go out in that series, and the speculation is it could mean regime change there insofar as GM Kyle Dubas, who doesn't have a contract beyond this season, and then head coach Sheldon Keefe. I mean, would they hand the keys to Carberry, or would they look for something, you know, outside the organization if Keefe's not the coach next year? So a lot of options for a good young assistant, and one of them could end up being Nashville if, in fact, that's why we're playing this waiting game.
What do you think about Andrew Brunette? He took over in a really odd situation, obviously, with Quenneville leaving Florida, and I thought did a nice job there, but he doesn't get the job. Ultimately, he's been an assistant with the Devils, obviously played with Tom Fitzgerald here with the Predators in their first year. So is he somebody that you think is going to get a lot of looks at a head coaching job?
That's a real complicated one. Okay, so let's break it down. So before he became head coach in Florida, when Quenneville had to resign because of all of the stuff that happened with the report in Chicago and his meeting with Bettman, Brunette, I talked to him. He didn't really want to be a head coach. Like, he was in a lot of different jobs in the NHL. He was working as an executive for the Minnesota Wild. He was an assistant in Florida because kind of Quenneville asked him to be. Being an NHL head coach wasn't necessarily what he wanted to do. Then he goes and has a great season as an interim coach with Florida, gets nominated for the Jack Adams, but then in the playoffs gets basically pantsed by John Cooper. Like, let's be honest. Like, yeah, he got completely out-coached in the playoffs, was shown not to be ready, to the point where the Panthers said, we're going to go and hire Paul Maurice instead because this guy's been a coach for like 100 years. So he goes to Jersey. It really helps them. I mean, he's been a great assistant coach for them, helped their power play, helped their young players, no doubt about that. Had some off-ice problems with a DUI situation, so that's going to factor into things too. But ultimately the question then becomes, will a team look at his sample size in Florida? Will they say how much of that is Brunette's coaching? How much of that is already a system in place from Quenneville? How much will they look at his maturation as a coach to say, okay, when he gets to the playoffs again, he's going to be able to handle the in-game adjustments that are necessary to win that he couldn't do in Florida? There's a lot of stuff to answer when it comes to Andrew Brunette, but hard to argue against some of the results that he had in the regular season in Florida and with the power play success that Devils had this year.
Greg Wyshynski from ESPN joins us right now. Greg, you mentioned the article you just had come out on the NHL coaching carousel, and you mentioned Barry's comments that he made on our radio station the other day, and nobody really knows what's going to happen moving forward if John Hines will be the coach here next year with just 1 year left on his deal. From a national standpoint and the entire NHL, what would you say is the way that people view John Hines as a head coach?
It's inconsistent. I mean, I think that he's gotten some good results. I think there are times when maybe, you know, for example, when he made the playoffs of the Devils that one time, it's like, oh, he had lights out goaltending for 3 weeks and an MVP performance by Taylor Hall, and that's why they made it. Look, I think he's got a lot of respect in the coaching community. I don't think he's a top-tier elite coach necessarily, but I can see a situation where, you know, just because of familiarity's sake, they run it back with him in the last year of his deal with a short leash, knowing that he can get some results from this team if everybody is healthy and playing to their, you know, expectations.
Greg Wyshynski from ESPN joins us. Greg, a name that is very well known around here, Peter Laviolette, not the coach with the Capitals anymore, but I think has been viewed as an elite coach. You know, he's won a cup, but Chase and I actually were just talking and saying, you know, he's a really just hard, tough coach, and maybe his message sometimes just...
I used a different adjective, but she's keeping it clean.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe his message just doesn't get across. What do you see for his future in the NHL?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, which is that he seems like the perfect guy to come in and try to get results immediately from maybe a veteran team or a team that needs a little bit of discipline, a little bit of structure. That's how he got the job in Washington. In Washington, when Barry and the Capitals couldn't figure out their contract situation, they hired Todd Reirden, who had been an assistant coach. He had a couple of years there, didn't necessarily look ready for prime time, and then they said, we got to go find a guy with experience to coach Ovechkin, to coach Backstrom, to coach these veterans. And so they turned to Laviolette. And it didn't really work out the way they thought it would. I think, you know, early on he was okay, but then it didn't really work out the way they thought it would. So I think his next stop will probably be a veteran team, a team that could use somebody that has had success in the past, that can give them structure, that can, you know, really put the hammer down and so far as getting what they need out of some veterans that maybe aren't listening to the message from their previous coach anymore. I wouldn't want him in a place like Anaheim, you know, a burgeoning contender. I wouldn't want him in some of those places. But I could see him maybe fitting in a place like Columbus, maybe. I don't know, like a team that's sort of
Calgary?
On the way up, but not quite there yet. Calgary would be another one, too. Although Calgary is an interesting one, like I wrote about today, because they're one of those situations where they don't have a general manager yet. So we're going to figure out what they'll want, I think, once we know who's running the show there. Because right now, all we know is it won't be a Daryl Sutter type. It's pretty much all we know up there, in which case it might not be Laviolette.
Yeah, I was about to say, they're kind of similar.
Yeah, he's a little bit closer to the picture of Daryl Sutter on that meter than he is to a picture of, like, John Cooper.
Yeah.
Well, the big news of the week was the Chicago Blackhawks winning the draft lottery once again.
We didn't have to bring
that up. Once again, Greg, you know, what has been just the chatter around the NHL? This team finally gets off of Patrick Kane after so long and now has a chance to go and get Connor Bedard.
Yeah, I mean, it proves that karma doesn't exist. I think we can all agree on that. I know there's a lot of people that think that the draft lottery is fixed. Like I said on our show, The Drop last night, like, if you think it's fixed and Connor Bedard isn't a Coyote, then it's not fixed, okay? Because, like, they're trying to get an arena passed in Tempe. They put that kid on the Coyotes, they're probably getting a new arena in the next couple weeks. So if they were going to ever fix it, it would be for that, especially considering the NHL's history with that team. But like I said on the night of the lottery, like I kind of feel bad for Bedard, right? Because the draft's in Nashville. The Blackhawks are going to get booed no matter where they're picking and who they're picking, right? Like, they're clearly going to get booed by the locals in the arena. But now they're going to get booed by everybody else because nobody wanted Chicago to get the first overall pick. So, like, there's a very good chance that Bedard is going to have this amazing moment, first overall pick in the draft, you know, labeled a generational talent. And, like, it's going to be 17,000 people just booing as he walks up to accept his jersey from Blackhawks management. So, kind of feel bad. The only guy that should get booed at the draft is Bettman, but it'll be Bedard probably too.
Real quick, does Jersey survive tonight, or does Carolina close it out?
You know, I got a funny feeling Jersey's going to win tonight, and I ain't saying that as a Devils fan. I'm saying that as somebody who's covered this team now for two rounds, and whenever the expectations are off for this team, they seem to play their best hockey. When they're supposed to win, they don't seem ready for the moment. And that's why game 7 against the Rangers was such a shock. The most fascinating stat of the playoffs so far for me, in the Devils' 6 losses to the Rangers and the Hurricanes, they have been outscored 32-7, which just tells you that, like, when they get down, they just give up. And that's, like, emblematic of a young team. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if they push it to 6 tonight, but I'm not sure they'll win the series.
Yeah, and then you got Seattle-Dallas tonight too, which that's been a fun one. I mean, I think both series out of the West have been really compelling.
They have been, and you know, Seattle's really had a different hero every night kind of mentality. I give them credit for fighting as hard as they have. The interesting thing in the series, though, is the goalies. Like Jake Oettinger, who, if you were watching the series from afar, you'd figure he's been playing pretty well if they're 2-2. He's been under-expected analytically in every one of these games. He's not been great. But on the other hand, Grubauer was not good at all in game 4. And now you're thinking, okay, is this guy going to turn to a pumpkin? Because he had a great series against Colorado, first two games against Dallas. If they don't get goaltending Seattle, they're cooked. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe the worm is turning on that right now.
Well, Greg, it's going to be interesting to watch. Appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Greg.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, joins us every Thursday, 9:45, talking some hockey as the coaching carousel is underway, and I have a feeling by the time he comes on next week, there'll be even more to discuss.
Maybe around here.
Yeah, you never know, for sure. Chase and Michelle coming up next. How much do we expect the Titans to be on prime time? I heard Jared's predictions yesterday. I have a few thoughts of my own. So does Michelle. We welcome your thoughts at 615-737-1025. It's Chase and Michelle, 1025-1063 The Game.